It's Wednesday, September 16th, and when an uncommitted voter asks you a question, you can't really just write them off as fake news. We start here. President Trump takes questions from swing voters in a swing state.
No.
Without, please stop and let me finish my question, sir.
If you're expecting softballs, you don't know Philadelphia. We'll break down the ABC News town hall. Until now, two Arab countries had recognized Israel. The president just helped double that number.
Those countries weren't at war with Israel.
But did yesterday's ceremony equal peace in the Middle East? And is $12 million justice?
A settlement is restitution, but it's not arresting the cops.
The family of Breonna Taylor reaches a settlement in her death, but it goes way beyond dollar figures. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
We do a lot of smack talk about polls in this country. Well, in 2016, the national polls were as close to right as you can expect them to be. ABC's final poll before Election Day showed Hillary Clinton leading by 3 points. She won the popular vote by 2.1, well within the margin of error. The real surprises, of course, came in individual states.
Move on now to the next state on the board here, Wisconsin. So now, this is one people weren't even really talking about as a possible flip, and it's not looking good at all. We got
states like Wisconsin and Michigan had a ton of voters who were changing lifelong voting habits, whether voting for a different party or deciding to vote at all. Well, this morning, ABC News and The Washington Post are doing something new. As we post this, we are unveiling for the first time our own state polls, the most noteworthy of which is from Wisconsin. And when you look at the poll of Wisconsin specifically, you see a few different things. Not only does Joe Biden have a small lead, 52-46, some of the things that made Donald Trump so successful here are swinging the other way. Take white women, right? President Trump absolutely dominated Hillary Clinton in Wisconsin 4 years ago among white women without college degrees, won them by 16 points. He is now losing that group by 9. That's a 25-point swing. Older Wisconsin voters, 65 and up, basically split 4 years ago. Well, according to this morning's poll, Biden leads that group by 17 points. These are the areas where Trump needs to close the gap quickly, and he needs to do it in key swing states.
Good evening from the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. Our town hall with the president starts right now.
Last night, he traveled to another one, another state he won, Pennsylvania, where he took questions from uncommitted voters in a town hall from ABC's 2020. We got ABC senior White House correspondent Cecilia Vega with us. And Cecilia, this was like must-see TV. You had President Trump, George Stephanopoulos on stage with him, but in large part because these voters came with these really pointed questions.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, Brad, I don't know that I've ever seen the president in a position like this.
Next question comes from Alexander Stamen from Pittsburgh. Sat out the last presidential election, I believe.
Unfortunately, so I did. Good evening, Mr. President. So I'd like to ask regarding your recent comments about our United States soldiers and referring to them as suckers.
Coming face to face with voters who I will say really brought their A game, Brad. I mean, I was just blown away by some of these questions.
You've coined the phrase, make America great again.
Right.
When has America been great for African Americans in the ghetto of America? Are you aware of how tone deaf that comes off to African American community?
Well, I can say this. We have tremendous African-American support.
One exchange in particular really jumped out at me. It's from a man who basically told the president, your Make America Great Again slogan doesn't mean anything to African-Americans in this country. Tell me when America has been great for black people in our country.
When the virus came in, that was probably the highest point, home ownership, for the black community?
And, you know, the president couldn't really answer it. And he tried and sort of, you know, gave his typical answers about unemployment rates and prosperity for black Americans. But the man wasn't having it.
Well, I mean, your statement is, though, make it great again.
And he went back at the president again and again and again.
We need to see when was that great, because that pushes us back to a time in which we cannot identify with such greatness. And I mean, you've said everything else about choking and everything else, but you have yet to address and acknowledge that there's been a race problem in America.
So if you go, well, I hope there's not a race problem. I can tell you there's none with me, because I have great respect for all races, for everybody. This country is great because of it.
And it was just this really raw exchange between the president and a citizen of our country who is really living in real time in the climate that we're living with in this moment of racial reckoning. I'd never seen the president confronted directly with anything like this before.
And confronted as well by people who had seen firsthand how the U.S. healthcare system works in the age of COVID-19. That seemed like a common through line as well.
You know, one person said, I walk down the street and I have to dodge people who aren't wearing masks because of my pre-existing conditions. Why aren't you promoting a national mandate?
If you believe it's the president's responsibility to protect America, why would you downplay a pandemic that is known to disproportionately harm low-income families and minority communities?
Yeah. Well, I didn't downplay it. I actually, in many ways, I upplayed it in terms of action. My action was very strong.
Yeah,
because what I did was with China, I put a ban on. With Europe, I put a ban on. And we would have lost thousands of more people had I not put the ban on. So that was called action, not with the mouth, but in actual fact. We did a very, very good job when we put that ban on.
Hi. Mr. President, I was born with a disease called sarcoidosis. And from the day I was born, I was considered uninsurable.
Another that woman felt like the president was interrupting her when she asked about health care.
And should pre-existing conditions, which Obamacare brought to fruition, be removed?
No.
Please stop and let me finish my question, sir. Should that be removed within a 36 to 72 hour period without my medication, I will be dead. And I want to know what it is that you're going to do to assure that people like me who work hard, we do everything we're supposed to do, can stay insured. It's not my fault that I was born with this disease. It's not my fault that I'm a black woman and in the medical community, I'm minimized and not taken seriously. I want to know what you are going to do about that.
So, first of all, I hope you are taken seriously. I hope you are. And we are not going to hurt anything having to do with pre-existing conditions. We're not going to hurt pre-existing conditions.
And I mean, these were some moments that, you know, you don't even see journalists in this country pressing the president to this degree. I've got to say, it was just some really wow moments. But, you know, look, I've been following this president for going on almost 4 years now. I got to say, Brad, I think he enjoyed this. I think he felt like he came off looking pretty good in the end. And he very much liked having these exchanges one-on-one with voters.
Sorry.
Terrible, and that's okay. It's okay.
She has breast cancer, but it made metastasis on her brain, bone, and lungs. She passed on the 19th.
And, you know, you saw a little bit of a different side to him.
I mean, as far as your situation with your mother, that is just devastating, because I can imagine how you feel. And sounds like a great woman. And I'll tell you, I'm pretty good with people. She gave us a great daughter, a great child. What she's done with you, the way you are, the love that you have for your mother. I can see that. It's hard.
There was some empathy there. And that's a word that, you know, the president's critics say doesn't often get used with him.
Well, can I just ask you more basic things, Cecilia? Because in a regular election year, we're talking about undecided voters all the time, right? These voters were described as uncommitted. You think President Trump is so divisive as a figure, the difference between him and Joe Biden or pretty much any other politician is so large, who is going to be undecided at this point? So have you gotten a sense of whether these voters truly are uncommitted? And if they are, what's holding them back from either guy?
Well, there are. They do exist. They are not this mythical creature, Brad. Here are the facts. There's not a lot of undecided voters out there, people who right now say, I don't know for whom I will vote in November, whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump. That's like 6% of registered voters at this point, according to most of the polls. But then there's this larger group that really is pretty big. It ends up being about 1 in 4 voters total who are uncommitted. These are folks who are either don't know who they're going to vote for, or they say they're probably leaning towards Donald Trump. They're probably leaning toward Joe Biden, but their minds are not 100% committed yet. They still don't know. So they're waiting to hear.
You know, it ends up being kind of policy versus person in my mind. I've always kind of really more aligned with the Republican Party in terms of their ideas about the platforms that they run the country from. But then you look at President Trump, the way he kind of acts personally, he's very disparaging to people. But the former vice president projects a sense of leadership that you kind of expect from the role of president.
The critics of the president, I will say, actually, let me back that up, because it's not just the critics of the president. The even allies of the president say he's not done a good enough job at this stage of his reelection campaign in trying to reach these people who could be swayed to vote for him, that he's so focused on firming up and cementing this base that he's missing a huge opportunity. And speaking to the hardcore people, but it's the people, these swing voters in states like Pennsylvania, in states like Michigan, in states like Wisconsin, like you were just saying, the uncommitted voters who could really make or break this election. It's these folks in these swing states that are really going to make or break it for a candidate right now. And they did it in 2016 in a place like, here in Pennsylvania, where the president just narrowly beat Hillary Clinton.
And we'll actually have audio of that town hall in its entirety in the 2020 podcast feed. If you want to get that right now, you can listen to it all. Cecilia Vega there on the streets of Philadelphia. Thanks so much, Cecilia.
Thanks, Brad.
We're here this afternoon to change the course of history. After decades of division and conflict, we mark the dawn of a new Middle East.
Now, before President Trump took questions yesterday, he appeared at the White House with the leader of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as officials from the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, who for the first time in their histories officially acknowledged the Israeli government.
For thousands of years, the Jewish people have prayed for peace. For decades, the Jewish state has prayed for peace.
Only two other Arab countries have done this before, Jordan in 1994 and Egypt in 1979 when Jimmy Carter was president. So it's a huge moment. This does not happen often. But what does it do exactly? ABC's chief global affairs correspondent Martha Raddatz is with us. Martha, on the scale of big groundbreaking peace deal to diplomatic formality, where does this rank?
Well, it depends on who you ask. And if you ask President Trump, he calls it or proclaims it a peace deal. And others will call it a peace deal as well. But I think it's fair to say those countries weren't at war with Israel. But it is certainly historic.
In a few moments, these visionary leaders will sign the first two peace deals between Israel and the Arab state in more than a quarter century.
As you say, it's been decades and decades since an Arab nation recognized Israel and certainly made these diplomatic relations official.
Well, and so what does that do in the broader Middle East, Martha? Because these are two countries, right? UAE and Bahrain, but they're not the only countries that are in play. They're not even the only ones with officials in Washington this week.
They're certainly not. And President Trump says 7, 8, or 9 others may join.
Including the big ones. We already have the big one, but including the big ones.
And he was asked specifically whether that included Saudi Arabia. And he said,
I do. I spoke with the king of Saudi Arabia. At the right time, I do think they will come in. Yes, I do.
We'll have to wait and see on that. Remember, Saudi Arabia is the biggest economy, has the holiest sites there. And this would be something that Palestinians would definitely see as a real betrayal if Saudi Arabia joins. But if the president says it's likely, there's certainly a lot of negotiations going on, and they have been for a very long time, as with these other countries as well.
Well, and so you mentioned the Palestinians, and just yesterday, as all this is going down, we see rockets going in towards Israel. Does this create a new kind of tension in the Middle East that we had not really seen before? Like, what does the situation on the ground become?
Well, you've heard the Trump administration say, look, the Palestinians just have to decide they want a better life.
Look, I think that a lot of people in the region are seeing that we can't wait for the Palestinian leadership to try and resolve this. Every country is going to do what's in their best interest, what's in the region's best interest.
They have changed the dynamics, the Trump administration, in the approach to peace, because they are essentially saying, great, you don't want to join us? Fine. We'll find these others. And that will put pressure on the Palestinians to do something.
But there is a real deal in the camps in the West Bank and Gaza, where the Palestinians are under siege.
Where does that leave them if all these Arab states come on board? Now, the other real big loser in all this is Iran.
If and when I win the election within the first month, Iran will come to us and they are going to be asking for a deal so quickly because they are doing very poorly.
Because the more Sunni Arab countries that join together, they have a real front against Iran. And that's right. What's behind this as well.
But then bottom line, Martha, fair to say that then you expect less hostilities between Arab nations and Israel as a result of this deal that Jared Kushner and President Trump brokered?
I think it definitely does. And one who travels or did travel a whole lot in the Middle East, you know, it just changes the dynamic there. You can have direct commercial flights in and out of Israel between these Arab nations. You have cultural exchanges, business exchanges. It really opens up a lot of room for further negotiations.
Yeah, more dominoes perhaps still to fall. Although, that's also what we said in the 70s and the 90s. So, Martha, we know you keep an eye on it in Washington. Thanks so much.
You bet, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, they could have taken the money. They got a lot more than that. The difference between a settlement and a turning point after the break. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor, you know the type, like I've had this person before, that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So, no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
One of the biggest questions surrounding the protests over police killings this summer was, what would satisfy protesters? What is the goal of this?
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Greg Fisher, the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky. Thank you for joining us here today.
Well, yesterday, the family of one person unjustly killed by police got a settlement worth millions of dollars.
While we await a decision from Attorney General Daniel Cameron on whether or not charges will be filed in this case, my administration is not waiting to move ahead with needed reforms to prevent a tragedy like this from ever happening again.
This was the Breonna Taylor case. She was killed when police burst into her home and shot her. There is no doubt she should not be dead right now. That's not up for debate. The question does still linger, though. Does this settlement count as justice? ABC producer Stephanie Wash has been covering this case since it unfolded. She spent much of the last several months in Louisville, Kentucky. That's where she is right now. Steph, what is this settlement?
Brad, I'm going to just start by using the words of Breonna Taylor's family's attorney, Lenita Baker. She said that justice for Breonna
is multi-layered. What we were able to accomplish today through the civil settlement against the officers is tremendous, but it's only a portion of a single layer.
So for her family, this wasn't just about money. We all know $12 million is a lot of money. It's one of the highest settlement amounts that have ever been paid in this country for the wrongful death of a Black woman by the police. But the settlement was non-negotiable when it came to reform.
We sought forth as we went through negotiating the terms of this settlement and the reform to engage police officers within the community, not just when they're dispatched to runs.
So this settlement is going to allow for several policy changes and reforms within the Louisville Metropolitan Police Department. That's going to include random drug testing for officers, a housing credit program so that officers will live in certain neighborhoods and improve community connections.
We will create a program to include social workers at LMPD so they can provide support and assistance on certain police runs.
Officers will also be encouraged to volunteer during their work shift at organizations in their communities where they serve. And last and very important, which is something that's, you know, a big part of the Breonna Taylor investigation, there's going to be search warrant reform.
We're creating a clear command structure when executing warrants at multiple locations.
So a commanding officer will now have to review and approve all search warrants in those affidavits before they even go to a judge, and they'll amend how they handle simultaneous search warrants that they're executing, like what happened on the night of Breonna's death.
And while her death was a tragedy for so many, let's remember that Breonna was first a daughter, a sister, a granddaughter.
So I just want to add how remarkable, Brad, it is to see Mayor Fisher up there at that press conference with Breonna's mother, her attorneys, and an activist like Tamika Mallory, who called the mayor out directly to fire the officers on the spot if they aren't charged by a grand jury.
A settlement is restitution, but it's not arresting the cops. And we want to say today that the police officers responsible for killing Breonna Taylor must be arrested in order for the community to feel calm.
So it was really this forum for so many key players to openly plead with Attorney General Daniel Cameron to bring them that next layer of justice, which is charging the officers involved in Breonna Taylor's death.
Well, and that's what I want to ask you next about, because this is a civil case we're talking about between the city and the family. But the city did not pull the trigger on Breonna Taylor. Three different police officers did, several shots. So what happens next now that the settlement part of this is done?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is something that this community, Breonna Taylor's family, their lawyers, they've been waiting on this, you know, for 6 months. So like you said, the settlement, it's big news.
We are here to hold Daniel Cameron accountable and make sure that he does his job.
But all eyes are on Attorney General Daniel Cameron right now to see if he's going to charge the officers that are responsible for Breonna's death. And sources say that a grand jury could hear the case as early as this week and decide whether to charge the officers involved. And Brad, we're not only talking about the officers that shot into Breonna Taylor's apartment.
We cannot forget about Joshua James, the man who lied on a no-knock warrant application that sent police officers charging into the home of Breonna Taylor and Kenny Walker.
But also the officer who got the judge to sign the search warrant for Breonna Taylor's apartment in the first place. You know, partly whether he broke the law by stating that packages were being mailed to Breonna's address by her ex-boyfriend, who was the subject of their investigation. But they want more than just the charges.
See these bullet holes for yourself.
Why is there a bullet hole right here?
This is a community that's been out in the streets protesting for the last 6 months, even before Breonna's name was being said and was known in mainstream media.
This is tragic. This is heartbreaking, but this is real.
So they want the same. This case is shining a light on the city, the police practices, the police's history, and there's a community of people in the city that are demanding change and hope that broader reforms come out of this investigation. And that is justice to so many people that live here.
And often, you know, we speak about the families of victims so much, as well we should, but it's often unfair to place a lot of expectations on them, considering what they're going through. Generally, you look to the criminal courts to decide what the actual sort of justice for the community should be. However, the community clearly very much on the family's mind as they negotiated the civil case. We'll see what happens going forward in Louisville, Kentucky. Stephanie Wash, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. I'm sitting in my home in New York right now, and throughout yesterday, there was this haze in the air. It wasn't the weather. It wasn't clouds. It was smoke from the West Coast wildfires.
Wildfires still ravaging the U.S. Across three states, at least 27 deaths reported this week.
At this point, jet streams have caused air conditions to change in New York, in Hawaii, and everywhere in between. And scientists say this is creating a new double threat in lots of regions with COVID-19. Because remember, this coronavirus hits people with respiratory issues. Those respiratory issues increase when you're breathing in particulates from fire. Makes it harder for your lungs to fight back, especially if you have underlying conditions.
Portland, Oregon now has the worst air quality in the world. In fact, Oregon authorities are now handing out N95 masks by the thousands.
So you'd think, wear a mask, right? Well, remember, cloth masks don't really protect you from outside stuff getting in, so doctors would usually advise wearing those N95 masks, the ones that really filter stuff out. But they're hard to get, since frontline workers still need them for protection. The smartest thing you can do, doctors said, is stay indoors when the air is bad.
Stay indoors, keep windows closed, run an air purifier, and keep a mask on if you're going to be near people you haven't been quarantining with.
But COVID also loves unventilated indoor spaces, so you really got to do your best right now to avoid gatherings. And since COVID symptoms can look a lot like smoke inhalation,
we're seeing a lot more people with productive cough, dry cough, shortness of breath.
You're supposed to call your doctor quickly if you're experiencing symptoms of either. Also, news you can use on masks. Florida Atlantic University let GMA sit in on a demonstration of what happens when your mask doesn't fit right, or, you know, when you half mask it and you leave your nose exposed. Droplets escaping everywhere. They use lasers. You can check all this out at goodmorningamerica.com. I'm Brad Bilkey. See you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.